Radio.
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
DV Radio. Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog, which you can find at booklocker.com, amazon.com, and barnesandnoble.com. Thank you for joining me today. Solo rant, no guest today, but I'd like to talk about a couple of things that I've seen there are just some things going on in the service dog community or around the service dog community that have me concerned, and I'd like to bring them to your attention. One of these things is a conversation I was having with Bart Sherwood, the founder of TADSAW, Train a Dog, Save a Warrior. And we were discussing what the ultimate goal of having a PTSD service dog is. And we are both in agreement that the goal is to not need a service dog anymore. It's to heal enough that you are able to get back out and do things on your own. Go back to shopping, possibly go back to work, go to movies, go to restaurants, do these things without the support of a service dog. That's the goal. That doesn't mean you get one service dog and the dog lives for 10, 15 years, and then when it dies, you're healed. It could take several service dogs. It could take a lifetime. It could take 3 or 4 years. Everybody's different. The way that they deal with post-traumatic stress is different, and the way that they heal is different. So that brought up the question, why are you getting a service dog? If the goal is ultimately to heal, why are you getting a service dog? For me, the answer was I tried all the therapies. I did EMDR. I did prolonged exposure therapy, regular old talk therapy, group therapy, and I took all the medications that they put me on. And none of the therapies helped. None of the counseling helped. And the meds only served to zombify me. I mean, it was the typical VA zombie cocktail, and I didn't have any quality of life. In fact, my idea of a normal day was to get up at 7, take my medications, and lay in the bed and stare at the ceiling for 8 hours until it was time to take my medications again, and then go to sleep. That was my whole day. That was what I did every day. And at some point during that low point in my life, I kind of thought to myself, this really isn't living. I need to do something else. I talked it over with my wife, and she suggested a service dog. We had just begun our breeding kennel, which is no more, and she said, why don't you keep one of the puppies out of the first litter to train as your service dog? And Skeeter was born. And that gave me a purpose. Raising that puppy gave me a purpose. Training that puppy gave me a purpose. Working with him as he matured and beginning to do public access, as he grew into a mature and confident dog, gave me a purpose. He saved my life. He got me out of that zombie state, gave me a new direction. My job became to train my dog. And from there, as I begin to learn and grow and heal and be and get more experience handling my service dog in public, I begin to learn that there is a gross amount of misinformation and a large lack of information about service dogs. So I decided to begin the PTS Dog Project. And that's what got me here today. So why did I get a service dog? Because no other healing, no other traditional healing treatments, modalities worked. They were not working. So he was a last resort, and it was the best resort. It gave me back my life. So that's why I got a service dog. But what I'm seeing, and the reason we're asking that question is, it seems to be a fad. And I'm not talking about purse puppies and, you know, taking Fifi the Wonder Poodle everywhere. But it seems to be the neato thing to do. Well, I've got the PTSD, so I'm going to get a service dog. And people aren't thinking about what that entails. They have little to no knowledge of the law. That would be the Americans with Disabilities Act. They don't understand that the law protects them, not their dogs, and that they have responsibilities to fulfill under the law, or they go to a third-party training organization who tells them what their rules are and makes them believe that their rules are the law. And then they get out into public handling their newly minted service dog, not understanding that there's a goal in mind, that there's a reason they're doing this, that they're trying to heal. And you see so much misunderstanding and miseducation out there. People who just don't know what they don't know. But everybody's doing it, so I've got to do it. And you know what? The decision to train and use a service dog in order to heal is a very personal and introspective decision. This is something that you need to deeply consider before making the decision, because it will change your life. Handling your dog becomes your vocation. It's your job. You train your dog, you train with your dog every day. I'm sorry, but even quote unquote fully trained service dogs are not fully trained, because it is a living being. And the handler needs to understand how to work with their dog, and the dog needs to understand its handler. There's still training to do. You don't get out of any work by getting a quote unquote fully trained service dog. It's not fully trained. And if you don't understand how to work with your dog and how to make adjustments in its behavior and routine, you're going to fail. I'm just being honest. And that's one of the biggest problems I have with most of these third-party training organizations for veterans with PTSD, where somebody else trains the dog and presents you with this, you know, newly minted, fully functional service dog, is that you don't know what you don't know. And these organizations don't always tell you. One of the groups of people I discovered needed the most education about service dogs was my fellow brothers and sisters, my veteran brothers and sisters who had service dogs from these kinds of organizations. But that the organization never took the time to teach them about the law. And that bothered me, because this is information that's easy to find if you start looking. It takes a while to find, it takes time, but it's not hard to learn what your rights are and to understand that with the protection of those rights with the ADA comes the responsibility of exercising them appropriately, namely training your dog. I can't say this enough, and I say it over and over on the PTS Dog Facebook page and in the PTS Dog group. Train your dog. Train your dog. Train your dog. Train your dog. When you're done training your dog, train your dog some more. And by the way, train your dog. The reason Skeeter gets along so well in public access situations, when we go to the store, when we go shopping, when we go to a restaurant, is because I have taken the time to be consistent and train him. And train him. And train him. My mindset is that training never ends, because both of us are living beings. Both of us, our needs, our abilities, our restrictions, our, you know, it changes as we grow and age. My physical health has declined. I have degenerative disc disease from an injury I got while I was in the Navy. The key word there is degenerative. It's slowly getting worse and worse. And as that has happened, I have slowly been working with Skeeter and relying on him for physical support more and more. That didn't happen 8 years ago when he was a puppy. That's happened in the last 3 years. So, again, training never ends. I had to train him to begin to give me that assistance. You know, I took a sled dog that was bred to pull and taught him not to pull. Then, when things with my back started getting bad, I've discovered I needed him to start pulling to help me pull the grocery cart. Do you know how hard it is to train a dog who you taught not to pull to start pulling? It's not easy. That happened 4 years after Skeeter and I started working with public access. So if he had been a third-party trained dog, a quote-unquote fully trained service dog that I was presented with, and I had no clue how to work with my dog and make changes, 4 years after I got the dog would not be able to perform tasks that I needed to assist me with my disabilities. Training never ends. If you don't know how to train a dog, there are organizations out there that help you. TADSAW is an example. That doesn't mean you can only go to TADSAW. It's one of the ones that I know about, where you and your dog go to a class. The dog trainer trains you to train your dog, gives you all the tools you need so that when something arises in the future with you and your dog and you have a new need, you have the ability to teach the dog to perform those tasks. Perfect example, Scav and Scout. Scout is a TADSAW dog. When they started training with TADSAW, the trainer was unsure how to train a hearing alert dog, but knew how to train a PTSD service dog, so taught Scav and his daughter how to train and handle Scout. And in the process, Scav and his daughter worked out how to train Scout to do the hearing alert tasks that they needed, independently of the TADSAW trainer who was teaching Scav how to train Scout to be a PTSD service dog. Scout's a dual-role dog. He does perform hearing alert, but he also performs PTSD-related tasks, such as blocking, watching Scav 6, deep pressure therapy. Okay, it's a perfect example, those two. The reason that Scav was able to train Scout to perform these extra tasks is because the trainer that he worked with taught him how to train his dog. Train, train, train. You guys think I'm a damn conductor now, because I keep saying train, 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 choo-choo, motherfuckers. Train your dog. If your dog is having trouble behaving in public, train it. Skeeter and I do remedial training probably once every 2 or 3 months, where he's just getting squirrely and too full of himself, and we have to take it back a couple of notches and do a public access usually at Walmart, where I've got a pouch with treats, and we work on his focus because he gets a little too full of himself. You know, he's a very independent, strong-willed animal, and I needed that when I began training Skeeter. I needed a service dog that was going to be able to stand up to me when I was at my worst. As the years have progressed and we've worked together for almost 9 years now, all total, public access for 7.5 years, as this time has progressed, we have developed a rhythm and a teamwork that works so well that at this point I am such a much calmer and more controlled person that I don't need that stubbornness. But he is a Malamute and he is stubborn. So I have to be as stubborn and be consistent and work with him to ensure that he maintains the level of training that I expect of him. And guess what? I'm the one who does that training. These are simple concepts when you start breaking it down and thinking about it. But people don't take the time to have these discussions, folks. And we need to. As a community, we need to sit down and talk about these things. We need to understand, first of all, that the Americans with Disabilities Act isn't just about service dogs. It's about all disabilities. And the law does not give you the right to use a service dog. The Americans with Disabilities Act protects your right. It does not grant it. You have the right. It is considered a civil right, a natural right as a human being to handle a service dog trained to assist you with your disability. The Americans with Disabilities Act is all about equal access. That is the point of the law, that no matter your disability, you have equal access to any and all places you may need to go that any other person, able-bodied, able-minded, is able to go. Now, there are, of course, some restrictions. You can't go into food preparation areas with your service dog. That's just for health and safety reasons. And that's fine. That makes sense. So understand that what service dog handlers have with the ADA is merely protection to exercise their right to use a service dog that assists them with their disability. But with that protection, you have responsibilities. In order to be protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act, your service dog, must be trained to perform work or tasks to assist you with your disability. That work and tasks must be directly related to your disability, which, of course, implies that you must be disabled. That's actually number one. You must be disabled. If you're not disabled, you just like having your dog with you, but you don't have a diagnosed disability that can be looked up in the Diagnostic Statistic Manual number 5, I think, I can't remember. But if it's not, if you can't look it up in the DSM-5, then you're not disabled. Legally. We're talking about the legal definitions here. Okay? If Fifi the Wonder Poodle just makes you feel good, Fifi the Wonder Poodle is an emotional support animal, and you do not have legal protection to take Fifi the Wonder Poodle anywhere but your housing and on an airline flight. And if Fifi the Wonder Poodle is going to fly, Fifi the Wonder Poodle better at least have enough training to be able to behave on an airline flight rather than mauling the passenger sitting next to you while you're not paying attention. But the ADA protects your rights, but it expects when you exercise those rights that you do so with responsibilities. One, you've got to be disabled. Two, the dog must be trained to perform work or tasks that assist you directly with your disability. You can train your dog to do all kinds of cool stuff. Open doors, get a beer out of the fridge, go get, you know, your slippers. But you've got to train your dog to perform tasks that are directly related to your disability. If you're capable of opening doors, getting your slippers, and getting a beer out of the fridge without your dog's help, then those are not disability-related tasks. It's just a well-trained dog that performs some neat tricks. PTSD is difficult to define tasks for because everybody's symptomology is different, okay? But some common tasks are blocking, body blocking, or creating space around the handler. That's one I use with Skeeter. People getting too close to me ramp up the PTSD and the anxiety, right, and start the panic attack. So Skeeter just interposes himself between me and other people. This is not a protection task. There is no aggression. It is simply that's where he places his body. And people don't get too close with a 100-pound Malamute in between you and them. Okay, that is a task directly related to my disability. The only way that I could create that space without Skeeter is either to run away, in which case I'm avoiding public, and that's a symptom of PTSD, or to shove them away, which is considered assault. It is a task that I cannot perform on my own. My service dog performs the task, provides me the space so that I do not panic. It is a task directly related to my disability. Same thing with watching my six. Standing in line at the grocery store, he posts up by my side looking backwards or right behind me, parallel, so that I could almost sit on him like a bench, and watches what's going on behind me. And if somebody approaches, he nudges me and lets me know, hey, somebody's coming up. Although it's not considered a disability by the VA, I have hearing loss because of my military service. The VA says it's an acceptable level. Thanks, guys. Yes. It's acceptable not to be able to hear somebody speaking directly to you in a store because of all the background noise drowning them out. Thanks. Okay, so I can't hear somebody approaching me, and if somebody approaches me from behind and touches me, well, that fight or flight response kicks in and I turn around swinging. That's a really bad idea. Say if I had dropped my wallet and some nice young lady is just trying to hand it back to me, and she touches me to get my attention because I can't hear her saying, sir, sir. And I, whirl around because she startled me and I punch her in the face. It wasn't intentional. It was a PTSD-driven panic response. But at that point, I have assaulted somebody. Or my service dog can stand and block behind me and nudge my leg when somebody's coming up to let me know, hey, there's somebody coming. This is a task I cannot achieve by myself. My dog performs the task in order to assist me so that I don't assault somebody unintentionally. It doesn't matter how unintentional it is. I still punch somebody in the nose, and there are repercussions for that, okay? This is the reason I trained him to block in restaurants rather than to tuck, because I almost knocked a waitress off of her feet. I couldn't hear. It's a loud restaurant, loud environment. She came up, touched my shoulder. I stood up, whirled around, swinging. Thank God she jumped back, and I pulled back at the same time, and I didn't clock her. Okay, so Skeeter provides a buffer. He lays beside or behind me such that nobody can approach me directly behind, but they have to come around him in order, so I see them, so I do not panic at their approach. This is a task that assists directly with my disability. Do you understand what I'm saying, folks? You have got to train your dog to help you with your disability. It doesn't matter how well trained the dog is. If it doesn't assist with your disability, it doesn't fulfill the requirements of the ADA for you to be protected to take the dog. Doesn't matter how well behaved and how well trained the dog is. If it's not assisting you directly with your disability, it's not a service dog. Now, in order to train the dog to that level of task, you have to train the dog to behave and to tolerate public access. This is not specifically spelled out in the law. However, it is absolutely implied. It is inarguably implied. If you're going to take a task-trained dog out in public with you, that dog must be able to handle public access, which means you must train. Train. Train the dog. You have to train the dog to interact with the public appropriately. Not to bark. Not to pee indoors. Or poop in the aisles. Not to go nuts every time it sees another dog or a cat or a squirrel. You have to train the dog to be able to perform its tasks in public. Whatever those tasks are, the dog requires training. Does that mean your dog has to be a robot? Absolutely not. It's still a dog. My dog is my forward observer. He's my scout. He lets me know that I can go up aisle 3 in the Walmart, that there's not somebody there that could set me off. Is part of his job, same with a hearing alert dog, is part of the job, the dog has to observe the environment. Skeeter watches my 6 so that I don't have to keep my head on a swivel. I am comfortable enough in his knowledge, I'm confident enough in his knowledge of my environment, of our environment when we're out working as a team, that I don't have to be hypervigilant. Skeeter does it for me. Therefore, Skeeter has to look all around. There are people, mostly from these third-party training organizations, who say, that's not a trained service dog because he's not looking only at you. That's not what I trained him to do. He's my forward observer. He keeps me out of situations where the PTSD could be a factor and could get me into trouble or could get somebody harmed, myself or someone else. I trained him to be observant for me, to assist me, because hypervigilance is one of the symptoms of my disability. So to those people, I say, you are wrong. And when you expect robotic behavior, especially from a PTSD service dog, you are short-selling your clientele. The dog is capable of performing so much more on their behalf. If the dog is allowed to interact fully with their handler, and with rules of course and training, with the environment. The whole point of using a PTSD service dog is that it enables the handler to return to some semblance of normalcy. And if these handlers are so busy, worried that every little thing that their dog does is going to get them judged and get them thrown out, rather than understanding how to handle their dogs, work with the fact that it is a living animal, and that it is going to observe its environment, and it is going to react, handle their dogs. If they're not taught to do that, then they're not getting the full benefits and the healing and growth that a PTSD service dog is capable of providing. Shame on you if you think that, you know, having a trainer train the dog and then present it to a person without any real exposure to the realities of day in and day out handling, if you think that that's adequate and that's gonna help and that'll fix them, shame on you. I have lived with and worked with my PTSD service dog for 8.5 years now, and I can tell you that we function as a team. Neither of us is capable of functioning alone. But together, with my guidance rather than his doggy instincts, and his training to assist me with my disability, together, I am able to function, and we function as a team, and are successful. None of what I have done with my life since leaving the military, none of the things that I've managed to accomplish would have been accomplished without my teammate, my partner, my best friend, my battle buddy, K-9-6, what do you want to call him? His assistance and the continued process of training that we do on a daily basis is the reason I am on this planet still. That's why you get a service dog. It's not a fad. It's not the thing to do because everybody else is doing it. No, you get a service dog. You train a service dog because you want to stop surviving and start thriving. There's a difference between just living and living to your fullest potential. And you still have limitations. I still have limitations. There are places I don't go. There are things that I don't expose myself to because to this day, they start the flashbacks. They start the nightmares. I do still avoid things, absolutely, because I understand what my limitations are, and I know that I can overcome many of those limitations with the assistance of my dog, but he can't prevent the flashbacks. He can respond after they happen, and he can try to distract me as I'm starting to get spun up, but there are still days and times where it just does all too much and it gets overwhelming. Most of the time, because our team is built on the bond between Skeeter and I, he is a preventative measure. He gets me before things get to the point, the threshold, where I'm overwhelmed and full into fight or flight response. He keeps me from getting there. You can't do that with a third-party trained dog that somebody else trained. The dog has no way of knowing what your limits are, where those thresholds are. The dog can't smell the chemical changes in your bloodstream, the dumping of adrenaline into your system, the dopamine, the cortisol. Okay? The dog can't learn that without the PTSD survivor there so that the dog is able to observe the changes and then respond to those changes. The reason that Skeeter can tell me, hey, you're getting stressed out, is because he saw me get stressed out. And he started reacting to that. And I took those reactions, those natural responses or natural alerts, and I shaped them. I trained him to perform a task in order to demonstrate the alert. When I start spinning up, somebody's in my face and I'm starting to get stressed, the first thing he does is put himself in between them and me and sits on my foot. When a 100-pound dog sits his whole weight, his bony little butt on your foot, you automatically reach down and start petting him. I don't care who you are. That dog sitting on your foot, your hand drops to his head and you start petting him. What happens? Scientifically proven. Endorphins start releasing when you pet a dog. Dopamine levels start changing. You start relaxing. Cortisol levels decrease. Adrenaline levels decrease. The relaxation and chemicals start releasing in your brain and you start calming down. If the situation's so dire that I can't start calming down, even though my dog has alerted me and I am petting him, which is my response to his alert, his, yes, you're right, I'm starting to get stressed, let me pet you because I know it will calm me. But if that's not working, because that person is persisting, even though there's a 100-pound dog sitting there alerting and telling me, get out of this situation, he will start physically pushing me away from the stressor. Trained task. I took his natural response. First I taught him to sit on my foot, then I taught him to push me away. As my anxiety levels increase, his insistence that we get out of there increases. This is why I chose a stubborn breed. Because at that point, when I'm mad enough that he's trying to push me away, he's going to have to go to the third level and physically stop me, because the next step is fist flying. And that's what he does. He stands up off of my foot from trying to push me away. He comes to face me, puts his paws up on my shoulders, knocks me flat on my ass, and then performs deep pressure therapy. He holds me down. He lays on me entire body length, forcing me to pet him until I am calm enough to remove myself safely from the situation. Skeeter has prevented me from going to jail. He's prevented Nevermore from going to jail. Here's another example. Skeeter decided on his own that he was going to work for Nevermore. We were grocery shopping at Walmart, and it was an extremely difficult trip because, well, stupid happens. And the stupid was strong at Walmart that day. And she had just about had the last straw as we were checking out. And I said, take Skeeter and go out to the entrance. I'll be right out. I'll finish it. Go sit, spend some time with Skeeter. Get some Skeeter time. Pet the dog, which has medically been proven to calm people by releasing endorphins. Okay? Go pet the dog. And just relax, and I'll finish this. So she did. She took Skeeter out. They were standing just inside the entrance, and some woman had to make a nasty remark. And Nevermore, Skeeter was pushing against her, trying to keep her away from the woman. She stepped around him and went after her. Physically, she was going to punch her. And Skeeter bit her butt, grabbed the back seat of her pants, and yanked her back and prevented her from punching this woman. No, I didn't teach him to bite Mama's butt. But he figured that he was not going to let her get into an altercation. And he did everything he could to prevent it, up to and including biting her, grabbing her, and not letting her move forward, because he knew that would be very bad. This dog ain't dumb. I didn't train him to do that. He figured that out on his own. He figured out level 1 and level 2 wasn't working for Mommy, so he created his own level 3. How does that happen? She has a bond with him, too. I'm grateful for that, because if something happened to me, he wouldn't be completely lost. He would have somebody who he loves. He works for her. Same as he works for me. When we go to the store, half the time I'm handling Skeeter, half the time I hand the leash to her and say, you need him more than I do today. We're together and he's right here. If I have a problem, he'll let me know. But he also lets her know and he helps her. And that's great. And that's an exceptional thing. It's not regular. It's not normal. But it's not wrong. There's nothing that says it can't work that way. Folks, you have to really think about your dog. You have to think through the process. You know, and I tried to express this in the book. I've tried to express it in several pieces I've written. One of the notes that I wrote, I think, is there is no easy way, is the title. Using a service dog is not the easy path. It's not a panacea. It's not a magical cure. In a lot of ways, handling a service dog makes your life more difficult. I'm being honest here. If you can't handle stupid people saying stupid things and interfering with your day as you try to go out and do things like get your groceries, don't get a service dog. If you're violent, you lash out, you have rage explosions, and you can't handle when everything doesn't go right your way the first time, and you lose your shit, don't get a service dog. Don't take it out on a dog. That dog doesn't know why you're freaking out. It just knows that you are freaking out and that you're freaking out at him. If you're going to get a service dog, it means you've come to a point in your life where you feel like you have to change. And you come to a point in your life where you are willing to do whatever it takes to change because what you have been doing is not working. So you change. And it is hard. It is painful. It forces you to do some introspection, to investigate yourself, to look yourself over in depth, figure out why this happens, what triggers it, so that you can train your dog to help intervene before the trigger gets pulled. What happens when a trigger gets pulled? The results are inevitable. Something downrange gets destroyed. All these people, the people throw this word triggered around and they have destroyed the power that the word could have. I don't talk about triggers. Once the trigger's pulled, you're done. You're in a full-blown panic attack or rage attack or anxiety attack. It's over. The trigger has been pulled. What happens after that is the inevitable. It's the worst stuff. It's the stuff that's why you're taking the drugs. It's the stuff that's why you're going to counseling. It's the stuff that has led you to the point where you're thinking, maybe I need a dog. I talk about stressors. What is the stressor that pushes you to the point where the trigger gets pulled? How can you not avoid, okay? But how can you manage those stressors? Some stressors, some things, yes, you have to avoid. A lot of times it's physical things, smells, sights, seeing things. I avoid looking at some very specific objects, and I try to avoid certain smells because they are triggers. As in, when I see that object or I smell that smell, I'm gone. I dissociate into flashbacks. It happened to me once on the highway doing 65, heading south on I-5 from Naval Station Everett to my housing in Discovery Park in Seattle. I saw one of those objects and had flashbacks doing 65 miles per hour driving. I don't know how I didn't lose control and die, but I somehow managed to come back to myself, pull to a stop on the shoulder. I don't know how that happened, because I don't remember doing it. I remember the flashback. Okay? The trigger is pulled, and we're gone. The PTSD takes over. Don't get triggered. Talk about dealing with stressors. Learn new strategies to cope with stressors. New coping mechanisms. You build that with your dog. Skeeter and my, our teamwork is focused wholly on coping techniques so that the stressors do not become triggers. And getting to that point was hard, people. Training my dog, training myself, developing the teamwork and the communication that we have developed where he says, hey, you're a little too stressed. We need to back off on whatever we're doing. We need to go over here. You need to chill. You need to take a Skeeter break, as I call it, where I stop. I get down on one knee and I just pet my dog and hug my dog and calm down. And he insists that I do that sometimes. He won't let me move until I spend some time petting him because my stress levels are heading to the point of the trigger being pulled. We have to understand and consider what it is we are doing every time we leave the house with that dog by our side. And the only way we can do it with integrity is if we ensure that our dog is, what's the magic word? Trained. We have to train and train and train and train. Training never ends. It is a mindset. I don't consider going grocery shopping anymore. I take Skeeter out for a training session. And as part of that training, groceries end up in the cart. Every outing is a training opportunity. every time we go out, one of us learns something. Most of the time, it's me. Sometimes Skeeter gets a refresher. But the whole mindset, your whole mindset, has to change. I don't care who trained your dog. When that leash goes in your hand, you are responsible for the way that that dog behaves and the actions that dog takes in public. If you don't know how to train when there are problems, you have a problem. If you don't understand how to correct behaviors, and you're taking the dog back to the trainer every 3-4 months because I can't do this, I can't do that, then maybe you don't need to be handling a dog. I am not trying to be ugly. I want to get the point across, friends. This is not a fad thing. You're not going to go get a dog because I'm disabled so I can. If you're not seeking assistance with your disability, which if the case of it is PTSD, then growth and healing, if that's not your goal, then why are you getting a dog? Think about it. Are you abusing the right simply because it exists? Think about that. Ask yourself these questions. Do you mean it? Are you willing to heal? Are you committed to healing? However long it takes, one dog, two dogs, three dogs, having a service dog for the rest of your life. If that's what it takes, are you committed to doing it? Because you want to heal. You want to grow. For some people, it may only take a couple of years and they're able to come back and they're able to heal. For some people, it may take their entire lifetime and they never heal. Everybody's an individual. Everybody's different. That's part of what's wonderful about being human beings. Okay? But you've got to undertake the PTS dog journey with the understanding that your goal is to not need a service dog. Is to get to the point where you don't need him anymore. Will it ever happen? Who knows? But if you're striving towards a goal, it could happen. And that's what you... Do you really want to be disabled? Do you want the nightmares? Do you want the panic attacks? Do you want the overwhelming anxiety? Do you want the isolation? Is that desirable? Is that fun? It sure as hell isn't for me, and it has been difficult for me to get outside of that shell. But Skeeter forced me to. In order to train, I had to get him out. In order to get him out, I had to go out. I went from living where the nearest house was a mile away and I had clear lines of sights and 360 degrees of view, essentially a compound that I could protect, to being able to live in a neighborhood. I have a next door neighbor. One's a couple hundred yards away, one's 20 yards away. And he's my friend and I talk to him. That was unthinkable before the time that I've spent handling my service dog. What's the goal? Why are you doing this? Are you doing it for the right reasons, or do you need to rethink things? If you haven't thought of these things, maybe it's time to start thinking these things through. You need to understand why in order to use the service dog to the fullest effect. I mean, that goes even for something like a mobility assistance dog. Look, I understand that I can't bend over and pick these things up, so I need to train a dog in order to bend over and pick these things up for me. Keywords being need to train. Train, train, train. Choo-choo, motherfucker. Train. Folks, this is not a trend for those of us who do think about these things. This is not the hip thing to do because everybody else is doing it. Handling a service dog is life-saving. Training my dog saved my life. My dog saves my life every day because I have a reason to get up every morning, even if that reason is just because he needs to potty. That's a valid reason. It gets me up. I start my day. We chat while I have my coffee. He rolls his eyes at me. You know, he grumps at me. We play. We tussle. He eats his food. You know, he fulfills that part, that gap in my brain that was missing, that took those simple, everyday, enjoyable things away from me. And he gave them back. Think about this, friends. Be introspective. Look into those dark crevices that you don't like looking into, so that you can start to understand why you're training your PTSD service dog and what to train the dog to do. Why the dog needs to do it. How does it assist you with your disability? One last point I want to make, and I'll wrap up this show, is remember that the Americans with Disabilities Act is a civil rights law written to protect your right, not a privilege, to equality. You have a right to be treated equally, whether you use a cane, hearing aids, an oxygen tank, a wheelchair, or a service dog. If you think that using a service dog gives you extra rights or privileges, check yourself, because you're going to wreck yourself. And people like that are wrecking public access for all legitimate service dog handlers. When I go out and I am denied access at a place, I don't get that. I mean, I do get mad, but I don't go nuts over it. I don't want anything special. I just want it to be treated equally. Service dog handlers, the law does not give us special privileges or special rights. It just gives us the guarantee that we are protected to be treated with equality. And using a service dog or a miniature horse is a right. It is not a privilege. It's not like driving a car. Legally, driving is a privilege that you earn. Handling a service dog is a right. It is the right of any and all disabled people. However, in order to exercise that right, you have responsibilities. Fulfill your responsibilities. If you're having trouble fulfilling those responsibilities, find someone to help. But at the end of the day, it is your responsibility. You need to fulfill the responsibilities in order to exercise the right with integrity. Thanks for listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. I am your host, Joaquin Watai. Don't forget, you can pick up a copy of PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and the Service Dog at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or from my publisher, BookLocker.com. It will be available in electronic formats such as Kindle and iPublications soon. Process is ongoing at the publishers now. I want to thank all of those who supported our raffle in order to raise the funds to get the e-publication versions done. DV Radio was one of those sponsors, so thank you very much to Bo and the crew over there at DV Radio. Don't forget that there are other programs available on DV Radio. One of the new ones that is pretty cool is Security Sucks Podcast. You can check all of the schedules out at dvradio.net and pick what you like to listen to. Remember, it is veteran-owned, veteran-made for you by your peers. Thank you very much. Have a great day. You have been listening to The Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. Dog out.
DV Radio.